Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where did you come from?
I am Shara Maud and I am originally from Longford and I now live in Coolock here in Dublin.
And Sharon, I was listening to the radio station and do you know what? I say this a lot about my guests, I kind of fall in love with people, like, do you know what I mean? And I was listening to the radio and it was about some sort of programme that was helping people and it was about you moving from Longford to Coolock and how they supported you through that. And I was listening to you and you were like, I could chat all day and you were like, I'm a chatter and all. And it was just brilliant. And even I think it was right. Who was it that interviewed you?
I haven't a clue. I agreed to it and I think it was, I'm not going to say actually, just in case I'm going to say the wrong place, but it was a good, like it was a well-known radio station anyway.
And it was good and I was listening to it, and your man, even your man, I could tell he was kind of falling in love with you as well. I was like, oh my God. And then I put out something on Facebook and I was like, I need to get in touch with this girl. Does anyone know who she is?
That's
and then everyone
right.
was just like, Sharon Ward music, Sharon Ward music, Sharon Ward music. And I was like, okay. So bring me back to Longford. Growing up, who's in the house? How many of you is there?
So my father, Ned, and my mother, Elizabeth, and then I have three sisters, Tracy and Michelle, and one brother, Neddy. And then tons of cousins who were like brothers and sisters. We were all reared around each other. Like, as a young child, I was reared all in the local little... Well, we moved from the countryside into town, and where we moved, all our uncles and aunts and cousins all lived around us, so we were... very close to our family and very around each other growing up. That's where the music kind of side of me came from. Yeah, because we were all, everybody was always singing or humming, or my big daddy, which was my grandfather, he was a great storyteller. So when he come into the house sure 3 times a day because he only lived across the road. And every time he'd come in, he'd have a new story to tell, or he'd say, sit down here beside your big daddy and we'll tell you about fairies, or I'll tell you such a thing and whatever. And then he'd say, I'll sing you a song. And he always sang without music. You'd just hear him before you'd see him. He'd be humming or singing. And I kind of fell in love with him doing that as a child. And that's where I kind of got to sing inside. He spent a lot of time with my father. As I was saying to you earlier, my father, he suffered a lot with mental illness, and him and his father were very close. So he more or less lived with us and we more or less lived with him. So that's kind of the best childhood memories I have. Yeah. And we lived a lot around like our cousins and family growing up a lot as well. Yeah. From both sides.
Can I ask you, with growing up in the travelling community, it's a very, very close-knit community.
Very. Family is, well, God, I would say, is number one. So we're very strong faith in God and our beliefs, and then obviously our family is not number two, I'm not going to label them, but I mean, they're the most important things to us. And we could kill each other, like, but we're still family, very family oriented, very helpful to each other. We're just very, we love to keep our little, I would call them cultures, I suppose, like keep our little culture alive. With our little traditions and I was mentioning to you earlier, a big part of growing up would have been music and kind of just storytelling and things like that. And that's one of the things I think the community is very well known for.
And tell me about school then. Did you go to school?
I went to school, yeah. I went to a little school a couple of miles outside Longford in Clundra. I think I was the only traveller at the time in it, and a cousin of mine. And it was okay, you know. I don't know if it was directly done with me, but yeah, I kind of would have felt very different in school.
In what way? Tell me.
I spoke differently, so I had a different accent. So instead of saying cup of tea, I'd say cup of tea. Now, you will catch me sometimes when I'm in my posh mood. I'm like, I'll have a tea. But like generally when I'm showering, it's just a cup of tea or just little words I would pronounce differently in school. Or I suppose might not have even just been because it was a traveller, because my daddy was like the local cool dude in town and he'd pull up doing fucking burn offs at the gate of school. So that might have been why, you know, there was loads of things. I don't know. I struggled a lot in school with like my work, maths and things, and I felt the teacher just had no patience for me. It was a very small school, I think from junior infants right up to sixth class. There was only like maximum 40 students. Really? And the whole school was tiny. So one class taught from junior infants up to first class, and then the other class, the other teacher taught from second to sixth or whatever. The first teacher I remember being very kind. Second one, kind, I suppose some teachers are like that, aren't they? They're strict when they need to be or whatever. I don't know if she was strict with me because she was trying to push me. But I don't have very nice memories of, like, not in a pity me way. I didn't really enjoy school, to be honest.
And is it, can I ask you about like a misconception? Is it a misconception about school being a priority for traveller children?
Like what? Can you say a word that a little bit differently for
like,
me?
If you said I'm not going to school, would you be pushed to school or not be pushed to school?
It depends. Every traveller is different. It's like in like the non-traveller community, some families push them and some families don't. Yeah. So I was lucky enough that my mother and father thought it was a good decision for us to stay in school or whatever. Not all of us did. One of the sisters did, and the others didn't. Actually, one of them went back later and so on. So we were kind of a bit of a mix, but my father left school early and he always hated that. He didn't really know how to read and write. So we'd have to fill out his forms for him, or if he was going to the bank. He had a very successful business and he'd be going in like dressed to the best in his custom made suits and his Mac and his sunglasses and his Cosworth outside the door. And he'd have to get someone to come in to witness him X and things, you know. And I suppose we kind of learned him how to do his initials and then eventually to write his name, and we'd read things for him and things. And I don't think he liked that. He was a very proud man. He loved himself. Like he loved attention, I suppose, in a way. Like, and he didn't like not being great at everything. He'd put his hand to everything and he liked being the best at. So I feel like he was kind of embarrassed in a way that he didn't read and write. And that wasn't really his fault, because generally in Ireland, a lot of travellers and non-travellers left school in them days. Like, so it wasn't unusual. But I feel like he knew he had potential and he never had chances. So he gave them to us. We had a choice whether to get married or not. Like, he never pushed us. He was very encouraging with the education. Like, me and my sister that went to college, he drove us every day and collected us every day. In between at times when he worked, like my older sister, he would have, like, in between working hours, drove her to college and collected her and pushed her a lot, like, you know. And same with myself. I probably wouldn't have went to college half the days.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, the same as my...
He would have dragged me up, you know.
My dad would be the same. Mm. My dad, and the exact same thing, that his education, he was really good at maths, but he didn't finish school. He had to go out, and I think he hated it, but he also had to go out and get a job.
Of course, and so, my father was the same. I think he was working for himself, or working, like, definitely working anyway from when he was very young, maybe 10, like 11. Do you know?
Tell me about your mum.
Mammy was very quiet. She got married very young, like she was 16, so she was longer with me father, obviously, than she even was with her own family. she was her, they say, the pet of the family, because she was the youngest, and her mother had her, I think, in her early 40s. So she had grown
God.
You know, grown daughters with children when Mammy was born. And so she was very petted. And then, so she married very young, had her first three children very young. Mammy didn't go to school or college or anything, but she would have pushed us to kind of go as well, I suppose.
And then tell me about growing up as a teenager. What kind of teenager were you?
I'm Sharon. I'm a traveller. Like me or not, kind of teenager. And to be honest with you, people say to me, like, like a handful of things I can probably remember discrimination wise. Mm. And that's not saying that it's not alive, because it's very, very alive. But I mean, and growing up in Longford, my father was a very popular man. Everybody loved him. And I suppose Mammy was as well. And then we had cousins that were very, you know, very well got in the town and so on. So, and then I was friends with everyone. I made friends with everyone. And yeah, teenager growing up in Longford was good, I have to say.
Did you get into trouble?
We all do as teenagers, don't we? I won't talk about that. You'll get me in trouble.
And you said, because we were talking in the car and talking a bit about the discrimination, and we know that is very much alive, and we know there's stuff going on social media right now. But for you, you rise above it.
I did, yeah. But obviously I did face loads of discrimination. But I kind of just let it brush over my head. I don't remember a handful of times. Like recently, actually, I went down to collect Jack. You remember I was in Jack's in the Box, and I went in to get fish and chips. It was some holy day anyway that you don't eat and meat or whatever. So I went into the chipper, and the delivery driver walked in, and he was like, I can't remember if he said I delivered or I'm not delivering down to them knackers. Fucking pikies, he kept saying. And I was just gobsmacked, and I made sure, because I don't jump first. I'm a very calm person. So I made sure he definitely said it. And he repeated it about five times, and I couldn't hold myself. I said to him, excuse me. He was like, yeah. I said, did you just say pikey? And he said, and I said, you definitely said pikey. I definitely heard you saying it at least twice. And he said, yeah, I did. I said, do you know I'm a traveller? And he said, no, oh, listen, I'm really sorry. I said, I was just so angry. I said, just about my two children, I said, are sitting out in the car there. I was just about to bring them in to collect their fish and chips with me. Do you know how hard it is for us to get like on in life, having to walk in to just pick up a bag of chips and to hear you shouting a word that's highly offensive to the traveller community? Like, and he was like, I'm really sorry. I said, no, fuck off. Like straight into his face, go away. I don't want your apology. I was so angry over it. And then I was like to the owner, are you going to do anything like about this?
Yeah.
You know, we'd be very well known in the place, and they like had a great relationship with staff for years, been going there. And he was like, look, I'm really sorry.
Jesus Christ.
So,
and as you say, you might have thick skin.
A
and
big
you,
slurp.
Yeah, no, I do like to say, you might have thick skin, or you might have confidence, not thick skin.
I don't think I always did, though, Rebecca. I'm not going to pretend I'm misconfident. Whether you like it or not, you get tough skin being a traveller, and that's just it. I think maybe I blocked out half of it as a teenager. I had good friends. I just remember having really good friends in the traveller community and non-travellers, and that just made it easy. And to be honest, in around the town where we lived in Richmond Street and St Michael's Road, we were all the one, the non-travellers and the travellers, which was just nothing. We all looked out for each other. At Halloween, we all went out and dressed in our black bags and our med hats. Mm. And then eventually we upgraded to the fancier costumes and stuff. But I mean, my daddy had always, because he was a wealthy, you know, I feel even conscious saying that, because he always reared us to not talk about money or whatever. But at the time, my father was a very wealthy man, and he was a very good natured man. So that when Halloween and things like that had come, he'd buy thousands of euros worth of fireworks. And I remember one time he actually dressed up as a witch. And that's a huge thing for a traveller man, like to be so bold, as I would say, like, you know. But he did it to make all of us so happy. And then he put off all them fireworks, and the travellers and the non-travellers all got together. He was a great bridge for people to learn from each other, you know. And a lot of my family down home married into some of them settled people, or even if they didn't, were like family, if you know what I mean, be very close. And as I said, obviously, there was law. Sure, I could sit here all night and tell you stories about discrimination, but I let them just, I always forgot about them the next day. Like, it bothered me for a few hours, but it just eventually, but I am very aware that teenagers, that it's very hard, because that one little thing will knock you back so much when you're sensitive as a teenager, you know.
I would have loved to meet your dad.
He was sound.
Because he had some legacy.
Yeah, he was the crack. As I said, he struggled very bad with mental illness. He was undiagnosed. Like, we're not sure whether it was schizophrenic, whether it was bipolar, it was a personality disorder, but he hid it well and he managed it very well because, yeah, he had his bad days. But 99% of the time, I just remember him being fun, a rule breaker. Just the crack. Everyone loved, young and old loved being around him. Very funny. Kind of then in my later teenage years, he was still very funny. All my friends loved him, and all of our friends, all his nephews, nieces, everyone loved him. He was very funny. He didn't know what he'd come out with next. Great memories as a child, because he was the cool daddy in the town, and having him as a father just made you so proud, because He was a very kind person. He was a very given person. Everyone loved him, but he also had a very contrary side to him too. Like, but I don't think that was in him. I think that was down to his mental illness. Having said that, he never harmed me, or he never did anything evil. He just struggled himself with his demons. Do you know, that's what I just say.
Was he like protective to yourself?
He was. Oh, he'd kill for you. There's no point in lying. In fact, 99% of the time you were like, don't let Ned find that out. Do not let Ned find that out. That was always the thing, like, because he just didn't want to. You know, he was a tough man. He was a very, as I said, he was a very proud man. And yeah, so most of the time everything had to be hid from him. He was very protective. Well, he loosened up a lot when me and Michelle, my youngest sister, he was very strict with the older girls. But when we grew up a little bit, he was a bit more relaxed. We were kind of his besties. He had less patience for adults and more patience for children, because we didn't ask him, I suppose, why are you down today, or what's going on in your head, or blah, blah, blah. We just wanted ice cream, turn up that music. People say, where do I get my taste of music? It would be from him and my big daddy, because they were the two kind of really musical. Now, all the family was. And our uncles worked in our yard. My father had a big scrap yard, and they were all singers. So they'd be singing all day. And I was just reared up very much like around music. But his taste in music would have been Roxette, Meatloaf, all the 60s kind of music. And he loved all sorts of music. And then I remember just one stage, he went through the Wolf Tones, you know, like all the Rebel songs. And that's the ones I fell in love with the most. I'd be blasting Willie McBride from the backseat. We'd be going off every Sunday. But when I think of Roxette, even when I think of the music Roxette, I think of him in a big snow white Sierra Cosworth with his custom made suit. He used to pay big money for these suits because he loved being different and, you know, being unique. And his hair would be gel back, he'd jet black hair, and the sunglasses would be on. And he'd have Roxette blaring, and he'd be driving through the towns, and everybody would be looking, and we'd be in the back. He'd tinted windows now, so nobody got to see the children in the back. But he was just so cool. I loved going everywhere with him. And he was fun. He always brought us out, because, like, obviously, travel girls, they don't really go out much when you're single. Like, we did, but it'd be always with our older cousins or sisters or whatever. But all our cousins and his nieces or mammy's nieces or whatever, and even me two elder sisters, they loved going out with him. He was the crack. Like, he was so funny. And he went to all the cool things that they went to too. So every Saturday night in the Parkhouse Hotel, I don't know if they heard of it in Dublin, but it was like, it was really good country and western bands, or all sorts of bands would be there every Saturday. And we'd be dying to go, but we'd be, no chance in hell that we'd be ever allowed to go. He'd be 16, and we'd be like, Ned, you know what's on tonight in the Parkhouse? And he'd be like, what? That band you love, I never heard them before. And he probably wouldn't have even. And we'd be like, you did, Ned, you loved them. And he'd be like, girl, you just want to go out, don't you? We'd be like, please bring us out, please. And we'd be so happy to go out with him. And like people said to me, you went out with your father. And we had the best nights of our lives with him. Like he was a great father. Like didn't let us overstep the line, but he let us really enjoy ourselves. He was a very good person.
So what was it like to leave them then and to get married? And what was that
so
like?
So obviously then when I was about 18, 19, him and Mammy had separated.
Right.
And I was kind of a bit lost, I feel like, from when I was about that age. I lived with my sister Tracy, and in between all of them, to be honest, there'd be a night in Mammy's, there'd be a night in my father, Ned, we call him as well. Be a night in Ned's, be a night in, you know, wherever, my sister Tracy's. So for them few years, I was a bit kind of all, you know, and I was going to college. So weekdays, actually, I'd probably more than likely stay out with him because he did the college runs for me. And then I met my husband.
Can I take you back for a second?
Yeah, because I'll talk forever. I feel like I said to you earlier, I feel like I'm alive about 100 years. It's just too much to fit in.
I love it. But you talk about your mommy and daddy splitting up. How hard was that for you children?
It was very hard because that's not... It's not that it's not something that happens in the community, but travellers, when you marry, and this is not like a controlling thing or anything, but we're so committed to our partners that it's usually a thing for life. So it really is heartbreaking for a marriage to come to an end because, and they had tried to make it work for years, I suppose, and I'm not saying like dating or whatever, they'd lived separate lives for years, pretending, I suppose, everything was still okay and it wasn't. So I kind of did take it a little bit bad. I felt like I was back being five again. And why'd you break up for, you know, but, and then, so obviously I had spent a lot of time and my younger sister and me, all of us did do our little role. But then I kind of spent loads of time with my daddy being, I won't say his carer because I wasn't, he wasn't that kind of man. He kind of was very independent, like everybody did their share or whatever, but I would have spent a lot of time with him. And then I met my husband and I said, "Why?" I had a sister living here in Dublin. So I was like, well, I'll just go up to Dublin and give it a go for a while. I knew like I had, kind of was just bored of Longford. I was like, I just want to see outside the town or whatever. And I was agreeing to come up. I had finished a beauty therapy course in college and I said, I'll move up to Dublin to Blanchardstown and whatever and try and get a job in Dublin. And then I just happened to meet my husband now.
Where did you meet him and what was your initial initial reaction to seeing him?
I fancied him straight away, I won't lie. He's going to kill me for this. He's a very private man, he'll kill me for it. But yeah, I did. I loved him. He is one of the best people I've ever met in my life, I have to say that. He's been the kindest person in a million ways. And I always say he kind of saved me in a way, because even though my father was there, it was an unstable kind of relationship because he wasn't well. So half the times you kind of, when you needed to talk to him about certain things, you couldn't really because you didn't know how he was going to react or if he was even able to kind of cope with it or whatever. And when I met my husband, he just gave me that security, I suppose. He made me feel very safe from the second I met him. He doesn't even know this probably. He's probably like, ooh, cringed out if he sees this. But anyway, yeah, I did feel very secure. And I loved being with my in-laws. Like I just clicked with them all straight away. My father-in-law was just so brilliant, Lord of Mercy and Paddy. And my mother-in-law is lovely. Like I think the first time I met them, I went in and I would never even like chew food in front of him at the time. I think I ate the whole box of biscuits. You know, I was like chatting away and drank about three cups of tea with them. And I just fell in love with the whole family straight away. And then obviously, as I said, I was reared in a house and everything. And not, even though we trailers outside and we were well aware, we kept all our cultures alive, even though we all lived in houses and stuff. But when I moved up with my husband, we moved into a camp. And it was real life, traveller life. Do you know, it was...
What does a camp look like? Tell me what
a camp is. basically you can make a camp anywhere. I'm learning this myself since I met my husband. I always thought it was just sites. Like, you know, I knew there was a place, like I had my big mommy make a camp anywhere. So I knew like you could pull in and fix yourself up a camp. But I mean, a camp is somewhere, it can be anywhere. It's just where you make it a home. So you just pull in your trailers and you pick your little corner, and we picked our little corner. We're all kind of facing each other. And it's where, it's just really where the storytelling, I think it's where all the culture is kept alive, because I would notice things like when my mother-in-law go out and light a fire, everybody, it would draw everyone out. And then there'd be cups of tea brought out and then cake, and everyone's chatting and everyone's laughing. And there was like just the spiritualness in the camp, because everybody saw so much faith in God. It felt like it was all joined together. It was like you could feel spirits in the air. I wrote a song actually, because and the wildness. Sorry, I'll keep talking about loads of things, but I'm not going into that story. But anyway, and then there was the wildness. My children just had that little different spark. The teacher used to say to me, like, he knows what he's doing about my Jack. Remember I was telling you the wild one in school years ago, best gossip in the world now, but he was just a little blackguard in school for 2 or 3 years. Not in serious, but just like wild and giddy and just wouldn't settle. And I used to say to her, there's nothing, only that he's a traveller child. He's wild and he's free. He's running around the camp. They all just go out to play all day. And they start from the crack of dawn. Summer days is just beautiful in the camp, because everyone's out chatting. The sun is shining. It's just nature. You hear the birds. As I said, there's that kind of spiritual feeling. Everyone's not known, but they're actually storytelling and sitting around chatting and talking about years ago. And our elders will be reminding the younger ones, like my husband's mother. She would sit with my children a lot and tell them stories of her childhood and important things that needs to be remembered for them to tell their children. So there was a lot of history and culture passed down, and just really a lovely sense of security. And everybody looks out for each other. You know, if I had the flu, well, the woman next door would bring in or feed. If my children was outside playing, she'd bring them in for dinner. So that would take that stress of me having to get up and cook dinners or whatever, you know. Everybody looked out for each other.
It sounds
and even though
so
I had
beautiful.
A great support growing up, it was a different kind of circle I was brought up in. When I came to the camp, I just felt like, oh my God, this was where I was meant to be. This is just, I just want to sit here and listen to like the birds and see the horses and look at the campfire and watch the children running wild, and just seeing that it's the simplest life ever, but it's everything. So then I was going to lead into a story a minute ago. So a man actually came then one time to try and buy the camp. And to him, of course, it looked like just an old field with trailers on it. And like, sure, these will be glad to sell this place and we'll offer them loads of money. And he was offering huge money at the time. And we were like, no, there's nothing you couldn't replace. I wrote a song about it actually in the South Camp here about spirits in the air and the children running wild, and this is where the storytelling happens. And if you take this land off us, like, you're going to scatter us all away from each other. And then how are we going to gather in the evenings for chats? Or not that it happens all the time now, but I mean, it's generally like it's us staying together and keeping our things alive. Because obviously as time is going on, things are going to die out, you know. So the camp life is very important to me. I could have got a house a million times. And as I said, your mom was trying to buy the camp. I wouldn't give it up for the world. I wanted to rear my children there. And that's where, when you heard me on the radio, that's where Sue had came in.
Tell me.
So when I moved up, obviously from Longford, I didn't really know anyone, only my husband's family. And a niece of his said she was in this like little group thing in Darndale called PFL, Preparing for Life. And I was like, what is it? And she said, I was pregnant with Bonnie at the time. And she said, it's just a thing you go to. And they give you like advice, you know, like little gifts and things like that. And it's like a companion, a mentor. I don't know how she explained it, but she was like, it's just like a little advice, like a baby program they do with you. And and they advise you what the best food is for your child and what about blah, blah, blah. So I was like, yeah, why not? So she signed me up for it, and I got a girl called Sue. And I thought it was just baby chat. You know, she was like, this is the vitamins you should be taking, or this is blah, blah, blah. And then we just started becoming friends. But because she was my mentor, I suppose at the time we were on like a business friendship. Mm. Now she was my little savior at the time, because she came in, and even though we were happy with it, and I'd be happy with it again, but obviously I'm happy I have my facilities now, but there was no electricity at the time.
Okay.
And I was pregnant and due my first baby, and I was thinking, oh God, you know, like, how am I going to manage for everything? Like, you need electricity to turn on sterilizers, and you need blah, blah, blah. And everybody was in fear, I feel, at the time, that the council was just going to start annoying us and moving us on if we start bothering them for things. And so Sue had got on to someone in the council and so on, and she would be probably, yeah, she is the reason we have electricity and bits and pieces today. Like, she helped me to find somebody who listened to me, who heard me and heard the story, and they were even a bit shocked. Like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And even though it seems like nothing, but it was a lot to me at the time, because afterwards, anyway, now we're besties. The things the woman has done for me since that. And we just grew a great friendship. She's just, I always believe God makes people cross paths with you for a reason. And I genuinely think Sue and me were meant to cross paths.
And in that time, like, was there other women in it? It wasn't just for traveller women.
Oh, no, there was. And that's a great, that's a good point, actually, because when I went over, PFL organised little meetings like mommy and baby days out or whatever. And Sue would always encourage me, Sharon, even if you only come for 10 minutes, just come up, blah, blah, blah. And I met, to this day, I'm very good friends with a girl called Katie, who's not a traveller. But me and her just clicked straight away. And then I used to love going to them. And eventually I met loads of the women who I'd still meet on a regular basis now, and made loads of friends out of it. And she definitely, it was a really good thing at the time. I'm very welcome and very interested in learning what a traveller was, you know.
Mm. Do you find that people are intrigued by you or want to know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do feel like I've shocked a few people in life, I feel like. Even, you remember I said to you before, like, I feel like I'm as well off to just get, you know, when I meet people, I'm like, if I'm introduced myself very quickly after I'd introduce myself, I would mention, not that I feel like I need to, but I would just, because I'm like at my age now, I'm not bothered with the bullshit. I'm just kind of feel like I need to be like, I'm a traveller and I'm very proud of that. Like, so just to let you fucking know before you start, because I've often been in positions where I go into places and I'd be sitting down chatting and people would be like, oh, sit here beside me. I'm like, thanks very much. And we'd be chatting for ages and to be like, introducing me even to the new people that's coming to the table, this is Sharon and blah, blah, blah. And then I would mention my traveller and everyone's like, oh. And then, so now I'm like, listen, this is who I fucking am before you try and make friends with me.
Yeah, a good or a bad do you think?
What do you mean by that?
When you say I'm a traveller, I'm like, oh, like.
It's not even a, oh, you're, it's a, oh. Because we were expecting you to look completely different and to talk completely different and to act completely different. And then we just bokeh and I'd saw.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, why, what's the traveller meant to look like, you know, yeah, or what we meant to act like? It's so silly. Or just when somebody'd say something to you like, do you know such a fella down in Cork? Of course I do. Of course I do, because he's a traveller and I'm one. Like, cop on.
Oh, God.
You know? It's a lot of people are just uneducated, I think, as well. There's all different types of people in all different communities. And
one size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
As I was saying to you earlier on, that's just... Yeah. And I think travellers have tough skin anyway. Like, in all fairness, I always say we're the purest of Irish you can get. And like, sure, Irish are known for being little warriors. Like, you know, yeah, we're just tough skin people. It's like, yeah, call us whatever, we're still going to be happy. And we're actually very happy people, even though there is a huge suicide rate in the traveller community. I think, I'm not going to like say this now as a definite, but I think it might be even up to 14% of the community every year. And I think 50% of our community is under 25 years of age. So there is a lot, but generally travellers are very happy people. Mm. They're chatty and they're always slagging and messing, and they'll find the fun in everything. You know, they'll always find the positive in every situation. Maybe because they've had to bear so much through the years, but they're generally a very positive community, like, you know.
And we know, because it was stuff in the news about mental health within the travelling community, and especially young men. So that's really frightening.
It is, because even my father, Lord of mercy, and I think within our community, because we've had to be so tough, the men especially, and he was... You don't really admit that you struggle with your mental health, like, you know. So Daddy hid it a lot, and it wasn't something men spoke about, because you were nearly weak. If you did, you were looked at differently, like, oh, he's a bit mental, that fella, you know. So they were kind of trained themselves not to cry, I feel like. I know my father did anyway, he hid it. I only seen my father cry twice in his whole life, you know. And one was at his father's funeral. And I can't remember what did it, but he cried one time when I sang The Fields of Attenrye for him. I forget what I was going on about there now, because I'm talking too much.
About the men, and this is what I want to ask.
Oh yeah, the mental health. He wouldn't talk about it. And, and I feel like all the traveller men feel, now it's much better now, but for a while I felt like they feel like it was letting themselves be weak, you know, not as strong or tough if they were struggling.
And would you, like, with Jack,
I always tell Jack, come to me. Jack comes to me now, like, as a teen, he's 12 coming into 13, and with teenagers, they've all them hormones and all these little anxieties going on and stuff, and he comes to me about everything. And I tell him, Jack, you know, if he cries, I'm not like, son, come on. Yeah. Pop the fuck on. I'm always like, sit down, cry it out, and then we'll have a chat, which is never, because Jack is like a ball of energy. But I mean, if he did ever, you know, and he probably has actually a couple of times, but I would never encourage Jack to hide it. Even my husband would be very good, like, in telling Jack to express himself. And Jack himself, anyways, he wouldn't have to be told.
And he's boxing now.
Yeah, he's boxing. He joined the boxing, and He's two years in a row now. He's Dublin champ and All-Ireland champ. He's doing great. He's a great young fella. All my children are great, I have to say.
How many kids are there?
I have three. I have Bonnie, Jack and Paddy. The last podcast, actually, I had, Paddy was only a few weeks old and I went on the podcast and said, I have two children. I forgot I had a third child. So I'm remembering to see him this time.
And what was it like for you to have Bonnie? Like, what was that for you?
Do you know, because I was reared, traveller girls are very old fashioned. You're handed a child to change a nappy and feed a bottle at 10 years of age. I was handed my first newborn. I'm like, what the fuck do I do with this baby? But so you're kind of, that's just a part of your role. I'm not saying that traveller women have only cook and clean and mind babies, but we take pride in that. The better of a babysitter you are as a teenager, the more presents you get. And just it was pride I took in my nieces and nephews, and I spent a lot of time with them growing up as well. I practically lived with Tracy and Robbie growing up, my sister Tracy and her husband. So I spent a lot of time around children. I was only dying for my own. I knew from when I was a young child that I wanted to grow up and be a singer and get married and have children. They were like the only goals I ever had, like, in life. Obviously it changes when you're older, but I mean, I remember from a very young age wanting to just be a mummy, and I'm so happy. That's probably obviously the greatest achievement in my life, and I love that I get to share this little journey with everything with them. And I suppose there was no chances. I always feel, even now I feel like there wouldn't have been. If there had to be the chances there is now for me as a teenager, where would I be in the singing wise? But then yeah, I wouldn't have my children or my life, I suppose. But I mean, now, thanks be to God, like if Bonnie, which Bonnie is a singer now and she's a little songwriter, but I know Bonnie, there's a chance that she'd be heard and maybe get a chance at being a musician now. Whereas when I was a teenager, it wouldn't, there wasn't them things. So that makes me feel good, and that maybe I can open a few doors for her.
And isn't that incredible that you're going to be an inspiration for her? Tell me about the singing.
Ah, the singing, sure. Like, I don't really know. Like, I suppose I did take it serious, but I didn't, because it was just something I always had. And as I said, it was reared up around singers, and music was played from morning to night. I was only talking, where was it last week? Wherever, anyways. And I was saying, I had no choice. From you woke up in the morning, you were dropped, you'd hear music going on the radio in the kitchen from the minute you'd wake up. Then you went in the car to school and daddy obviously blasted rock set or whatever mad phase he was going through on the way to school. And on the way home from school, there was music. The minute you walked in the door, there was music. If you went out to the yard, the car doors were open with music blaring out them and all the workers around chatting. And if there wasn't music blaring, some of them was humming while we were fixing the car, or it was just constantly singing and music around us growing up. So I knew nothing else. It was just, I remember singing since the youngest age I can remember. I remember singing.
But when did you realise that you were a singer?
Probably when I was I don't know. Yeah, I suppose when I was probably about 18, I probably, maybe even before that, actually, I think I recorded like a single in a recording studio for me 17th birthday or whatever. I kind of started recognising when I was around 16 or 17, when I'd be in the room singing to myself, because I wasn't a very confident young one. Like, I wouldn't be, having said that, when daddy would be having, if he went to the pub and me and the girls were all in the kitchen and we were still up when he came home on a Sunday night, well, I was med-sing all the songs, like, you know. So I suppose it was recognised in me, but believing in myself as a singer, probably kind of recognised. I'm actually not that bad, probably around 16, when I'd be singing ballads, which was, maybe it's just about what you enjoy singing. I was like, I really liked this and that didn't sound that bad, actually, you know. But yeah, I never tried, I suppose, because I just thought it was never going to happen.
And when did it start happening for you?
Well, a few times. So when I came to Dublin, then my husband's nephew, John Connors, he had Lucy Kennedy out living with him. Well, obviously at a few weddings and things. Actually, one of my family members met one of my husband's family members at the market one day. and said, Anise of mine married whatever. And he was like, oh yeah, Sharon. Did you ever hear her singing? And he was like, no. So he came back up and there was like a party or whatever a few weeks later. And he said, ah, go on, Sharon, sing a song. I said, but I will anyway. I had a few drinks in me. So I sang the song and that was it. And I never got away with ever not singing a song again at any occasion. And my father-in-law loved me singing, my mother-in-law. So at Christmas and things, I would always sing. And then John was doing something with Lucy Kennedy out in the camp, living with Lucy. Yeah. And he brought Lucy into me. Me and her clicked anyway straight away. She's a lovely girl. And that night they were doing a bit of filming at the fire. And they said, are you coming out to sing a song? I was like, no, I had a big totty head and no makeup on. Just wasn't in the mood. And to be honest, I wouldn't be really that confident. I was like, do I really want to be singing on the telly? Like, So after a bit of persuasion anyway, I ended up going out and singing, and Lucy came back to me. That instant she said to me, would you do the talent show? I'm just going to get on to blah, blah, blah. And I was like, ah, Lucy, stop. So the next day then she started ringing me and saying, I let the producers and whatever in Ireland's Got Talent here, and they love it and they want you to do it straight away. And I had to say to her, listen, no, but at least let me just think about it, because first of all, there was a lot of, at the time there was a politician, I can't remember his name, Peter Casey, I think he was from Donegal or whatever, and he had loads of supporters anyway, and he was giving out shit about Travellers, and it was kind of frightening how many people were supporting him at the time. And I was like, I'm putting myself out there now for everyone to give. I'm going to, everything that everyone in the whole world wants to say about Travellers, they're going to take the opportunity under my posts. And I don't know if I'm really that, I'm, as
you
said here, I don't really,
child. Yeah.
No, and I'm not going to argue back or anything. And I'm kind of soft, I suppose, in that way. I didn't really want to be dealing with that shit. Like, I'm an awful worrier. So I had to think about it all. And then what if things went, what if people did really fucking love me and they took family time away from me, and my children were my number one and my husband, and I was just fine in life. I was just living my little life, doing my school runs and enjoying things. Did I really need to do this? And am I too old now? What would I be even doing it at this age for? You know, there was so many things I need to think about. And I just said, fuck it, I'll just do it. Lucy kept, the people from the show rang me then. And he said, look, just go for it, blah, blah, blah. And then I got such a shock on that stage. So that exact moment, I knew I was meant to be a singer. You can see the shock on my face, because I was like, fuck, I'm after messing up that first song. And I really didn't want to sing that song. But that was one of the songs I had sent them. And they were like, look, just sing that. And then, you know, whatever. So when I sang the second song, I suppose as well, that was a little fear, because when I was a teenager and I used to sing all the Mad Rebel songs, the girls would be like, Sharon, will you shut up? What's wrong with you? Like, you sing whatever. Like, we want, turn that shit off. When we'd be driving around in the car, I'd have the Wolf Tones blaring. And I'd be like, I'm not, turn that down now. And summer's day, sunglasses, like, driving by. And when I think too, I wasn't full shilling. But so I even brought that to that age. I was kind of like, are people going to like me singing this kind of music? Like, it's not very popular, even though we're in Ireland. Some people don't really, they're not really into the kind of songs I would sing. And I got such a shock when the audience did the big scream. And that second, then I knew I was to do it. And then the semi-final went great. And then all the comments started coming in. I think it was that, or was it before that? I can't remember, but there was hateful comments, disgusting. And I was like, I'm not doing it. I knew I shouldn't have done this fucking thing. And then I decided I wasn't going to do the show no more. I wasn't going to go back and do the semi-final or the final. That I was deleting all this shit. And the girls, we all had a big talk with me in the kitchen. I was like, right, okay.
When you say the girls, was it
sisters, cousins, sister-in-laws, whatever, all of us gathering, nieces, whatever. And they were all like, no, you don't. You have to do it now, blah, blah, blah.
Did the producers protect you? Did they offer support?
They did, because I rang them and told them about the comments, and straight away they were like, Sharon, we weren't aware of that. We're very, very sorry. And they turned off all the comments on all the videos from then on. And usually they do things like that, but it was just a little thing they had forgot to do, you know. So they were very nice to me.
Was that tough?
Reading them things were, because there were comments, I don't even know if I should say them, to be honest, but you can mute it out if you need to. But there was comments like, just round up all those travellers and put them into, I don't know if I'm even wording this right, concentration camp. And we should just gas them all was another comment. And just sick, like shit that I would not like my children to read. And I was like, this is my fault. I have to put myself out there now. Look, what, for the rest of my life, that video is going to be stuck there and blah, blah, blah. And I was in such panic mode about, but I have to say, Ireland's Got Talent, they did such a lovely thing to me that time. They made me feel so special. And even when I think, when I look back at all the whole thing, they did make a big fuss for me, you know, to remind me that I was worth everything and I did deserve to be there. And sure, like I didn't even have to do an audition. I just went, sang at the fire in the camp, and then I was straight in front of the judges. You know, there was steps to that. And so,
because they knew, they could see that there was talent here and it had to be seen.
I like to be humble about it. So I'm not sure what it is, but I know God gave me a gift. He gave me this. I'm not really sure, but people like it. It catches attention. And I'm enjoying that, if it's going to bring good publicity for my community. And I'm just putting myself out there and letting people learn who I am. Here's my music. Here's, you know.
And when you went back on the stage after all of that, how did you feel?
Yeah, I felt great. I won't lie. I didn't give a shit really, because I have, as I said, I have a lot of friends from the non-travellers, you know, from every community, to be honest. And all of them were very encouraging, so.
Did you feel like Ireland was behind you then?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Definitely. Somebody had screenshotted the bookies at the time. I was like, you know, I think I was to win. They had me to win or whatever. And then I was like, yeah, you're right. I have to go back in. Even though I didn't win, I did, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because I learned the world so much, because that video has reached all over the world. I know there's not huge views, but there's like 6 million views on it.
Wow.
And five of them went up really quickly at the time. That last million and a bit only went up like over the years, but that was 5 million people that were very educated very quickly. Like, I was just a traveler woman out on the stage, being myself, singing the songs that I sang and was reared up singing. And I was, no, you know, I was just bare. I was just myself. And I think it changed a lot of people's minds. Not that I changed. I was the only one that did that. Obviously, I was one of many that did that, I think.
How did the community take it? Like, where did,
oh, God, it was so good. Everybody was just so proud. I felt very loved by my community, because obviously with my daddy struggling with mental health, he pulled back from all his family and friends, and he didn't really mix with anyone. And then we eventually moved out from that place where I was saying we were reared as children and young teenagers. And we moved out to countryside, and we didn't really see anyone anymore or whatever, you know. So I heard from all of them again, like all my old friends and cousins and things down home. And it just reminded me the next. So when they rang me the night before the audition went on telly, they were like, Sharon, are you ready for the morning? Because you're going to be on Google. And I was like, ah, yeah. I didn't really think it was that big of a thing. And they were like, the newspaper's coming out. Check your Facebook page and see is there anything on it that you don't want anybody knows and about, blah, blah, blah. And I really didn't think anything of it, Rebecca, to be honest. I went into bed, and the next morning they sent me another thing, and they were like, did you get the paper? I ran out and woke my husband. I said, go to the shop quick, go and get the paper. And every paper nearly had me on the front of it or in it somewhere. And I just had all my curtains closed in the sitting room, and I was sobbing. I was like, I'm so fucking happy.
Oh, God.
Do you know, I was like, geez, I felt so proud for the whole community. I felt so good. So here I was getting good attention in a time that people were trying to drag the whole community down. Like, this little tiny little thing just like perked everyone up, and everyone was like, who is she? And, you know, everybody wanted to learn more about it, and what they were learning, people were liking, I suppose, at the time. And yeah, so it's all been good experience up to date. And now I'm working on loads of original music, and I'm really excited for that this year.
And you're doing shows and everything.
Doing shows. I have Cobblestone on the 10th of May. That's going to be a great gig, actually.
Where is that?
It's in Smithfield here in Dublin. And so if anybody wants tickets for that, it's on Eventbrite, come along. And I did one not long ago in Paddy Brown's. It was a great gig. It's a lovely pub. Can't recommend the owners enough. Everybody was just so nice in there, I swear to God. And then I do a good bit in the Axis. I have a great friend, Niamh, over all the team in Axis are very good to me. So I have something with her actually next Tuesday. And then I have other little bits and pieces. I got invited to Germany this year in November. And I got invited to go to New York.
Would you ever like to do Eurovision?
Yeah, I would love to do Eurovision, yeah.
Yeah.
I would, because I think, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit, I think I'm kind of, I would be very Irishy kind of, I feel. You know,
I think it'd be incredible.
I'd love to do it, but would it be too big for me to do? Could I do something like that, like represent the whole country?
That's huge. Could.
Some pressure on me. No, I just want to sing a few songs in the corner and hope everyone likes them. I don't want to take that role on. I know, but obviously if I was ever asked to do it, I would love to, but I think I'd be a long way. It'd be some shock to see a traveller up singing for the Eurovision. Like,
it'd be incredible.
Maybe not in my time, but for the next generation, it would be great to see that happening.
Your daughter?
Yeah, exactly. We'll save that one for Bonnie.
Yeah. Can I take it back a little bit to the passing of your daddy? What was that like for you?
It was a very strange thing. In fact, I feel like I'm just on the tail. You're never finished grieving. But I feel like I'm on the tail end of grieving because, so obviously, I could go on forever talking about, but obviously he just refused help. He was a very sick diabetic and so on, so on, so on. And he just didn't want the help, I feel like, in the end, God help him. And so we seen him deteriorate very quickly or whatever. But for years, he disconnected from us all so much mentally. You know, there was very little conversations. In fact, he didn't even have much patience, God help him. And we understood. But in the last few weeks before he died, it was the most comfort I'd felt from, or security that I'd felt from in a long, long time, because he was sitting having full conversations with us and reminding us, and he had us in stitches of laughing. And for them a few days, it was like he's back to who he should have been. Like he's back to before he got sad and before he started kind of locking himself kind of away from the world and losing his friends on purpose. And I was like, oh, it was so hard, Rebecca, because we were like, we finally have you back and now you have to go. It was so strange, you know. But then again, we all, so obviously we believe that our ancestors come back for us when we're dying and that they're waiting like to bring you so you're not afraid or whatever. And I could feel that. So he was like lying on the bed and he was slow, you know, he was just breathing at this stage. He was unconscious. And his brothers and his nephews and his family, sisters, and all of us were around him in the room. And we decided to sing him a few songs and his little fingers were twitching away, you know, like he was loving it all. And each of us took a turn around the bed and it was like we were singing him lullabies to sleep. It was very, yeah, it was very emotional, like at the time. And in that moment, like I felt my big daddy and I felt his aunts that he always talked about that was so good to him as a child. And just so much went through my mind because it was like he struggled so much and it was so unfair because under all of that, he was such a fun person. He was so intelligent. It was just a very, I don't know, I felt like a child again. I felt like I had him back, but it was very sad that we had to let him go just when there were the things we'd longed for him to do for years, if you know what I mean. But, and it was strange because we were grieving a father, but he was like a brother. And he was like a child. And yeah, he was our protector. And he could be the grumpiest man in the world. It was a strange grief. It was, and I'm still not even over it. I find it hard even talking about him because it was just a strange one. Because it wasn't the like your average father and daughter relationship. Realistically, he struggled. We kind of minded him. We babied him. We coaxed him on his grumpy days, you know. But he equally minded us, you know.
Can I ask you about your cultures? And you'd said earlier on that, you know, eventually they, there's a possibility that they might die out.
Yeah. Now, I don't think that, like, the important ones we keep, they'll ever die out. Like, you know, we have very... And I'm not going to start them because some of them could be wrong and some of them could be right. So I don't know. But everyone has their own little things that they're going to keep alive. But I mean, eventually, if we... What I meant by that was eventually if we don't keep our little important things like our storytelling and our music and our poetry and learn it to our children, talking about our ancestors, telling the stories of how they survived from generation to generation, what they had to deal with. Encouraging our elders, to, like our elderly, to talk about traumatic things that they went through that they felt they couldn't about, you know. I've spoken to older women in the traveller community and they told me stories that would just made me so sad. That it's just an older Ireland. It wasn't even, you know. But anyway, I see I'm gone off track now. I forget what I'm talking about again, Rebecca.
About cultures.
So, yeah, we keep most of it alive. But I mean, like, if we don't tell our children all them things, then there's not, how are they going to stay like a traveller? How are they going to know why it's, like, how are they going to know why it's so important? I do believe that each traveller, I always, like, I drew a picture one day, it sounds so childish, but I drew like a group of people and each of them had a little circle in their chest and in the middle that circle connected. And I do believe that God gave travellers a little thing. So even though we say, what's a traveller look like? I know what a traveller looks like, because if there's 100 people and there's a traveller in that 100 people, I can tell that's a traveller and they can tell I am, even if we're not dressed the certain way people say or whatever. I mean, it's a spiritual thing. It's a, I sense it off you, you're one, and you sense it off me. And I believe God gave us that little gift.
How powerful is that?
Yeah, I love all that. There's
that's definitely so powerful, a great,
like, I see my mother-in-law one day chanting to me, baby, Paddy. I called him after my father-in-law because he was just one of the best traveller men I ever met in my life. My father-in-law, Paddy Ward. What a great man, like, I have to say, what a great father-in-law, even to step from that, like, life, like, obviously I had a great life, but I mean, I was a bit lost for a father figure in life, realistically. And when I met my husband, he just took that on. Like, he was such a fun person to be around, like, and my mother-in-law, very good person as well. I loved them. I was very lucky with my in-laws. And they're all the crack, like, you know, they're funny people as well. And they kind of remind me of my own. It was very easy to leave home to go there, even though I missed my own family. But now the gas thing is, when I go home to Longford, I'm itching to get back up here because I made my own home. I feel really at home with the life that I'm living now. You know, I love the camp. I wouldn't give it up for the world. Waking up in the morning, hearing the birds outside, winter or summer, and you'll see the horses and the little dogs. And at night time, you'll see the little wild foxes coming on for their bit of food that we leave out for them. Wild cats, you know, there's always the lazy dog lying around. It does be like a farmhouse out of a little storybook you read when you're a child in the summer out in our house or out in our camp. It's lovely, it's magical, all the little animals. Yeah, it's lovely.
It sounds magical.
It is. What? And in the evenings we get out, as I said, all the campfire, get the children out, sit them down and chat to them, and it ends up in storytelling. And we'd be even encouraging them, like, to sing a song. We say, no, if we could sing a song. But eventually they'll all have a day when they'll be singing at that campfire. Summer's in now. You'll have to come out.
Come out to you. Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love it. Tell me, what does the future hold for your children? Like, what do you want for them?
I just want them to reach the highest potential. Like, I want them to be allowed go to the top and nothing to stop them, especially being a traveller. I don't want that to be, if I have to waste all my life fighting for my life to be easier for my children and everyone else's children, and even the younger traveller community, like, that's fine, because I'd hate now for Bonnie. Like, I always feel like, Rebecca, now I do feel like, it's too late. Sure. When I was in my teens and my 20s, that's when I had the most talent. That's when my voice was so powerful, when I could sing Celine Dion songs like they were nothing to me. And I could hit them notes. It was no big deal. Like, at 10 years of age, I was put up on the kitchen counter to sing The Power of Love by Celine Dion. And they were like, oh, my sister, see, told you, child could do it, the child could do it. And I feel like they were my best years. I'm not into that music and I would never be able to reach them notes now. But I mean, being recognised as a teenager, even in my 20s, I feel like that was probably the best years for my voice. And I feel like, yeah, now I'm getting, I know Ireland's Got Talent got me loads of attention and it has been since. Thank you so much for that, by the way, if you're listening. But I mean, I should, realistically, I feel like sometimes I would have never had them chances, as I said, because you had to break down so many walls or else just pretend you weren't a traveller and I wasn't willing to do that, you know. But for Bonnie, I hope that it's just, it doesn't matter. That it's like, now I feel as well though, people are kind of trying to understand travellers in a different way now. They're seeing the magical kind of side to them and we're mysterious and they want to learn loads about us. So it could, I'm hoping that Bonnie being a traveller, if she went to a talent show, that like me, it stands out and she's different and they're like, oh, this, you know, she has her own little unique thing as well. And I know, I hope that life, I know life will be, is going to be easier for the children. So I just want them to pick whatever they want to be. If they change that 100 times in life, fine. But I mean, I don't want them to ever say, I'm not going to get that because I'm a traveller. I want them to say, I am going to be whatever and to be stubborn about it and find their place, you know.
I love it. I really do. And, you know, I knew from the moment I heard you on the radio, and I would never go on, like I never go on Facebook or everyone on that. And I was like, I have to find out who she is. I was literally driving, I know exactly where I was. I was driving over the Custom House Bridge, driving over. I could hear you. I was trying to find out where I was going, but I was like listening and listening. And I was like, I need to meet this girl. I need to meet her. Because even you sitting across from me now, the way you speak, it's poetry. It's just poetry and I just wanted to share that.
Oh, thank you. I do shy talk a lot now. In fairness, I do talk a lot, but I like, this is probably the most honest conversation I've ever had about my life, even in general. I'm kind of very private about my life, but I suppose people, don't you educate people? Like all my story, whatever, even though I don't have a story, but I mean, talking about little things, it's encouraging. When I speak about even my father's mental health, I always hope there's somebody out there listening that hears that and says, you know what, I could end up like that if I don't pull my shit together, or there is help. And, you know, it's not, I'm not going to like be a failure or weak or whatever if I admit it, you know. Or even for girls, like that might be a bit encouraged. There might be women out there today, and I know there is. There's some very, very, very talented traveller singers and songwriters and poets and musicians and everything. And they might never get a chance or feel like they, there's no hope. What's the chances? And I know how hard it is to have all that singing bottled up in you for years, knowing you have something and singing it to your kitchen presses or waiting until a wedding or an old christening or a party comes up because that's your only chance to sing your song, you know. Like, if there was any traveller women listening today and they have that talent, I'd love for them to hear this, because I'm 39 years of age. Realistically, I should be a grand... Well, I could be a grandmother and it could have been years ago. Like, and now I feel like my career is really only starting musically now. So I hope I'm a hope for someone. That they're like, maybe I can do that too. Mm-hmm. And that they come and find me and that I can, you know, I'd like to be an example. I want, when I'm an old woman sitting down, that I can sit down and smile and that everybody that talks about me says, she learned me something, that woman. Do you know, I had great crack with her one time and met her. And yeah.
And on that note, we leave it there.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Sharon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more.
And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.